Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday, until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now. And just in time for the holidays. Get $5 off a holiday shave set by going to harrys.com and use the code HAMNATION.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 278, December 14th, 2016. Santa Claus visits Ham Nation. Hi, everybody. It's Wednesday night. What happens at 8 o'clock Central Wednesday night is Ham Nation, and it's a show about ham radio, and we got a really fun thing tonight. Great guests, lots of information, and we're going to be talking about Christmas presents you might be able to go buy. Oh, we're going to talk about that in a while. We're actually going to have a special guest on here that could help deliver them maybe to some. But we have a lot of fun things before that. Let's see what's happening. First of all, George, how are you doing down in Mississippi?
I'm doing pretty good here, Bob. It's turning a little cold. You know, Don Wilbanks is not with us tonight. He's out partying with the iHeart Media Group. So we all know how dangerous that could be.
Uh-huh. I guarantee you he will not be at work on time. And if he is, he might be there, but this part won't be there. But that's okay. He's going to have fun. And we have Gordo with us. Gordon, how you doing down in warm Costa Mesa?
We are fine. We're waiting for the rain, but we have a clear night ahead because incoming Gemini's meteor shower this evening. So look up and watch out for incoming. Back to you, Bob.
Okay. And we have Pete with us. Pete is a wonderful, wonderful, fun guy, KE5GGY. And you probably would know him from the 3916 Freewheelers Net. Pete, how are you doing? It's nice to have you with us.
Well, good evening, gentlemen. Yes, this is KE5GGY. I am live and in color and in costume at SantaNet Central. And I guess tonight we'll be talking about the 3916 SantaNet in our 11th year of connecting good boys and girls to Santa Claus. And even on a couple of occasions, we connect bad boys and girls to Santa Claus, which can be very interesting. So anyway, it's great to be here, Bob, and thanks for having me on.
Well, we'll get back into that in just a little bit. But Gordo's going to go teach a bunch of folks in the Coast Guard. And I think tonight, more in teaching, I think they're going to have a boat parade, and he's going to get the heck out of here. But he's got some stuff for us first. So let's go back down to Costa Mesa. And Gordon, it's all yours.
Well, thanks, Bob. And again, tonight is Gemini's for the next couple of days. And it's too bad. I wish they were about a month later, because a month from now is the Quartz Fest Ham Fest, January 22nd through the 29th. Then a week later, Palm Springs. And then those of you in Florida, I'll see you at Orlando Hamcation. Soak up a little bit of sun. Then it's Yuma. And then in May, of course, it's the Dayton Hamvention at the Greene County Fairgrounds. But you know, Bob, last weekend there was activity up on the 10-meter band. So, Victor, if you don't mind, let's just do a little recap of why 10 meters is so exciting. The 10-meter band is available to technician class operators. Yeah, I know most of you knew that, but we really need to promote getting on the air, and their voice privileges are from 28.3 to 28.5. The 10-meter band, and go ahead, Victor, on the next shot, also has the CW portion where you can tune in to beacons, and that's 28200 to 28300. And sometimes we tune in to the beacon band from 200 to 300 on 10 meters, and you don't hear anything on the band scope. You just see a lot of irregular ups and downs, which is just cosmic noise or your neighbor's Christmas tree lights across the street. But last weekend, for about 2 hours, wow, look what happened between 28200 and 300. The beacons jumped up and were coming in from South America. So South America on 10 meters, yeah, you could probably do it with a three-element beam, 20 over 9. But tonight, I just wanted to say you don't necessarily need this exotic setup for 10, but rather you can just do your own dipole. And the dipole, 468 divided by the frequency in megahertz, end to end, stick your coax in the center there. The dipole as an inverted V is a great performer on 10 meters. Each side is only about 8.5 feet long. So it's not like you've got to run all around the roof to get things up. Or you can do a vertical dipole with a counterpoise of a quarter wavelength, 8.5 foot piece of wire times 4, and the vertical section straight up. You can hang it on a tree, and you'll be resonant on 10 meters. Yeah, you could go out and buy a 10-meter antenna. This one's 10 through 80. And yeah, you could go out and buy an expensive ballon to make sure that all of the energy stays up into the antenna and doesn't sneak back down the coax. But, you know, we recommend start with good coax, and you're going to take 8.5 feet going one way and 8.5 feet going the other way, and you'll have yourself a 10-meter dipole. And we can actually roll up our own choke to keep the energy up in the antenna. I do it around a pill container, about 8 to 10 turns. Then I slide it off, and there is your 10-meter antenna choke, or for any antenna. You don't have to go to the big RG8 or LMR 400 or 213 for 10 meters. It's low enough in frequency on HF that you can go ahead and use RG8X, but I would stay away from RG58U. RG8X is plentiful. And once you get everything up and rolling, if the frequency is clear, do a little test, and we recommend 28400 as the meeting spot for those of you wanting to hear the activity as we did this past weekend on the 10-meter band. And let me tell you, 10 meters was pounding into South America as well as out here on the West Coast. We were talking to folks in the Great Lakes, all frozen, as well as to folks on the East Coast. Double check you've got a good coax connection. Yeah, the center, that's easy to do. But where coax connectors go bad is, oops, someone did not solder the braid to the outside of that PL259. It was intermittent, but only for a moment. Solder that little dude in there, and you should be able to not wiggle the adapter to the smaller coax. See it on the very left-hand tail end? That should be also soldered into place. That means you got a good connection. If you can wiggle that UG connection, that adapter, with the smaller coax, then you're not going to have a great antenna until you get it fixed. So here it is, 8.5 feet on one side, 8.5 the other. We're about ready to string it out and do some testing. And, of course, testing, we had the ends all set up like this, and we wrapped them back on themselves. So the antenna looks like it terminates about where that line is on the insulator. And we put on the old SWR analyzer, and all of you should have the SWR analyzer. I mean, this is ham radio's most useful tool. This one from MFJ, but there's Comet, and there's many other great ones out there that you'll find in the DX Engineering catalog. Oh, look at that great SWR. Well, wait a minute. Look where I am. I'm above where the technician class operators can run voice on. I need to be at 28400, and I'm up here at 28663. Not a problem. You don't have to cut a thing. to cause the band to resonate lower in frequency, think of lower, longer, simply undo some of the reps and just leave that little pigtail. That's now like a little capacity at the end of each leg of the 10-meter dipole antenna. And after I did that, I popped right up on about 28,400, right where I need to be able to get all the activity. This is what I did to work South America, Venezuela, Brazil. I mean, they were pounding in, not on the beam antenna I have, but this was just strung up on a tree in the backyard. And you see the coax hanging down. If you look real carefully, hanging down is that homemade ballon. One side goes to a tree. The other side goes to who knows what by the wood pile. And that thing was resonant, and it worked all over the world. Well, at least South America. And finally, to catch all the activity on 10 meters, beside doing a lot of monitoring, take a look at, next time you're at a ham fest, the 1010 group. They have the 1010 International News. Simply Google 10-10.org. And you'll learn more about the 10-meter band and all the activities. So if you have friends that are technician class operators and they're getting burned out on running FM and the little handhelds, maybe they're going to DMR and digital and fusion and D-Star. This is good. But get them on high frequency, because this past weekend, every so often signals would come out of nowhere and stay strong for about 8 to 10 seconds and then disappear. Well, what was that? Well, that was meteors from the Geminides meteor shower going on right now. So we hope all of you have a great time on 10. And if you're up late tonight, then take a tune, 28,400, no squelch, just listen to the background noise. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you'll hear two or three conversation. And that's thanks to a meteorite coming in and leaving an ionized trail. So that's my story. We'll see everybody next week. Hopefully, we'll hear you on the air on 10 meters. So, George, how about you? Do you get on 10 a lot?
Well, Gordo, I'll have to fess up. No, I really don't. I don't have a proper 10 antenna. I've got a 40-meter off-center fed dipole. That'll tune up on 10, but, you know, not the best 10-meter antennas. But from what I understand, when it's working, doesn't take a whole lot of antenna to do 10. So great tip there. And, boy, I like the way that the dipole came together. And everyone in the chat room wants to know there, can they get the wood from your backyard? You probably don't need it in Southern California.
Well, after the next rainstorm due tomorrow night, it'll be wet wood. But, yes, I'm always happy to have people come by and load up a couple.
Okay. Well, good to see you tonight. We're going to play What the Heck Is It again in a little bit here for a contest and give away some things. But right now, you know, I was thinking this week, what was I doing 10 years ago? And so I took a little trip back in history to look at some surface mount soldering techniques. Actually, my first experience was surface mount soldering. So let's take a look at that. Then we'll come back and give away something.
Today, we're going to do two things that I've never done before. We're going to build a radio, and we're going to do some surface mount soldering. Now, I built a radio before. I built several crystal radios with mixed success on those. And I built a transistor radio before. But today, we're going to build a software-defined radio. It's called the SoftRock. The SoftRock is a small, low-cost, good-performing software-defined radio. It takes 12 volts, and it delivers IQ audio signals to a computer sound card, where software decodes the audio into something that we can understand. It was designed by Tony Parks, KB9YIG, and Bill Tracy, KD5TFD. I had to go on the internet and do a little research and find all the documentation that I would need to start with, so I'd know what I was building and how to put it together. So I did that, and it's scattered about is the best way to put it. I would just say go do a Google search for SoftRock if you want to know more about this particular receiver project. It was initially sponsored by the American QRP Association, I believe. And now I don't think they are associated with it. However, they do still recommend the project. It's available today, I believe, from the developers, but that could change, by the time you watch this episode. I really don't know. So just some good Google searches should get you the results that you need. Now, there's been several different versions of this radio already. The kit we're building today is version 6 of the Soft Rock. I've never done any surface mount soldering before, and I don't own any components to do it with. So I started out by doing a little internet search and finding out how other people were doing it at home. There's looked like three different methods to me that might work that others had used. One involved using a regular soldering iron with a fine tip on it and just soldering with that. And I have a tip small enough that would probably work for some of the larger surface mount stuff. Another method involves using a small convection oven or a toaster oven that's temperature controlled and putting the board in there and baking it. And then a third method, this is one I found on Cash Olson's website. This involved using a beverage mug warmer to heat up the board and just to keep it at a good consistent temperature, and then using a hot air embossing gun to actually melt the solder and reflow it. Now, I don't know how this is going to go. I've never done it before. There are some examples on the internet. The examples showed some problems, so I hope we don't run into any of those. Maybe we can learn a little bit from others' mistakes as we go. Maybe we'll create a few of our own, and someone else will learn from them, too. We begin by populating the side that's got the most components on it. We'll use the mug warmer and the hot air embossing gun to do this side. And once we've got that done, we'll flip it over and we'll put on the remaining surface mount chip and capacitor with the regular soldering iron. And then we'll put in the other through-hole components. So to begin soldering, we're going to need the right solder for the job. This is a tube of solder paste that was obtained from the Cash Olson website. This stuff is quite expensive if you buy it in the quantities that Kester sells it. Fortunately, Cash Olson will sell you a little tube of this very inexpensively, and there's enough in here to do the project, so we should be set to go with that. Now, this solder paste should be stored in a refrigerator, and that's where this has been stored for the last several months, so I hope that it's still good. But we'll begin by taking it and applying a little bit of the solder paste to each of the spots here on the PC board where we want to make a connection now. And we need to be careful that we put the same amount on both sides of the component. Otherwise, it might pull the component to one side or the other when we heat it up. This is a tiny needle, and it's a little bit hard to get this stuff out. Before I go any further, I wanted to show you where I have put the solder paste on the board here. You can see I've already mounted one component right there. It's just stuck in the paste. These other little pads here for the capacitors. And I've laid down little solder ropes. We'll plug in the mug warmer now, though. It takes 15 to 20 minutes to reach full temperature on it. We take the chips and we position them right in the solder paste where they're going to be, and try to center them up as best we can on there. We now have all the components situated on the board, and I'm going to go off camera and fine-tune them with a big magnifying glass to make sure everything's perfectly centered. We're going to let it just sit on here for a little while. 2 or 3 minutes. I do believe that I see the edges may be kind of starting to round off slightly. Okay, the solder is starting to melt. I hope you can see it with the camera. It's already happening, so it's too late for me to move. This is going amazingly well. I believe all the solder has melted at this point. And they say here to leave it on the leave it on the warmer for a little bit longer. There we go. And it doesn't look bad. None of the components jumped out of place. I think we may have had success here on the first attempt. We're going to put these two on with a conventional soldering iron and a really small tip. Well, it's been a couple hours since we last spoke, and I have now completed mounting all the through-hole components on the board here and soldering them. So all that's ready to go, and what remains now is to mount the crystal, which is no big deal. And we've also got to wind a couple of little inductors and a transformer to go on here. Winding these coils is a little bit of a challenge. Not too bad. They all do need to be kind of uniform when you get through. I finished the two inductors. Still winding on the transformer. It's an interesting conversation behind me. There's a couple of older hams on there talking about building radios, and probably nobody would build one today. Finally, the last connection. This SoftRock version 6 project has been a lot of fun assembling. Here's what the boards look like. So you can see the rear contains the three surface mount integrated circuits and 10 surface mount capacitors. And the front contains all the other components. I've had a lot of fun building this SoftRock version 6 kit, and I hope you've enjoyed watching it. And maybe you learned a little something, who knows. It really surprised me at how smooth it went, and when I got through, I looked at it, and I thought it was an excellent job. You know, I was kind of disappointed that you really couldn't see it any better than you could when I was actually doing it on the video. But I couldn't move once I started, you know, I had to follow through. So I had an old hard drive here with some surface mount components on it, and I took one of the chips off and put it back on so that our viewers could see what it was like. I applied a couple of little lines of the solder paste there, but, you know, it looks like maybe that's a little much, but we'll try it anyway. As the solder begins to meet melting temperature, you'll notice it start to become shiny, and then eventually it'll actually start separating and going toward the pins on the chip. Unfortunately, I had too much solder paste and it wasn't evenly distributed, so you can see that it pulled the chip off by one pin all the way around. Oh, that's not too bad. I can reach in here with a pair of tweezers while it's still warm and put it in place. Oops.
So there you go. You know, the surface mount soldering was really a lot easier than I had expected. Since then, I've done a little more, and I've got a little hot air rework station now. But just that little hot air embossing tool there worked virtually as well. So you can do that stuff. It's not that hard. Don't let those kits scare you away that use surface mount components in there. Just use the tips I gave you right there, or do a little searching around and find how other people are doing it. Well, you know, last week we played, what the heck is it? And it's this right here. I asked, does anyone know what this is? And it's a connector of some type, we think. And it's, I'll tell you what it is. Steve Mead, KC1AQQ said, George, the item you held up was a microphone connector, and that's correct, Steve. It's a Switchcraft 2501F microphone connector for unbalanced microphone. You used to see these on a lot of audio gear. Some ham rigs would have them. The guesses were kind of all over the place on this one. Some people said it was a solder terminal. Some folks said it was an antenna connector, and I guess it could be used for that, but it's a microphone connector. So, Steve, congratulations. DX Engineering is going to be sending you one of these nice DX Engineering canvas tote bags. This is a super heavy-duty tote bag. I use it, particularly on field day to carry my coax and power cables and all in. It's good and rugged. You're really going to enjoy that. Next week, I think we're going to play What the Heck Is It? Because I've got one more thing here, and we're having fun doing this. So I want to know, what the heck is this? Look at it carefully now. This is one side of it. Here is the other side of it. Well, if you think you know what that is, send an email to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might win an MFJ 270 Guardian Angel Surge Suppressor. This is a little suppressor here you put in line in your coax. This one has got PL259s, or actually SO239s on it. It'll handle up to 400 watts, but they've also got one that'll handle up to 1,000 watts. It's good DC to 1 gigahertz. It's a gas tube suppressor in here, and of course you need to ground it as well for it to work correctly, but these things are pretty nice for giving a little extra protection to your antenna system there. All right, so tell me, what the heck is it? hamnationcontest@gmail.com. Right now, though, let's get a message from our friends over at DX Engineering.
So have you looked at a calendar lately? We are 10 days away from Christmas Eve. How's that holiday shopping working out for you? Have you started yet? I haven't. Well, if you've got some ham radio operators on your list, or you're making your list for someone else, perhaps a not-so-secret Santa, you got to check out DX Engineering. In addition to all the cool stocking stuffers like T-shirts, hats, mouse pads, clocks, station accessories, DX Engineering also has the latest gear from all the most popular ham radio manufacturers. And, of course, if you like to wait until the last minute, or you don't like to wait, but it just seems like it happens that way, there's the DX Engineering gift cards. You can buy them online, print them out instantly, and they always fit. They're super handy, especially if you've got someone on your ham radio gift list. They're accepted online, by phone, by mail. They can be redeemed for the entire face value or just part of it, and they're available in denominations from $25 all the way up to $500. Makes a perfect stocking stuffer. And they're great to give and receive, so you might want to suggest them, like I said, if someone is searching for the right gift for you. And DX Engineering recently started carrying professional quality protective cases from Nanook. These Nanook cases are the best way to move and store your valuable ham radio gear. They're also an excellent place to set up your MCOM Go kit. They've been tested to withstand scorching desert heat and frigid Arctic blasts and everything in between. Strict military standards, they meet them. They're lightweight, they're virtually indestructible. And the exclusive Power Claw latch ensures that they stay closed. They come in a huge range of sizes and styles. The perfect one is waiting for you right now at dxengineering.com. Speaking of stocking stuffers, the official DX Engineering gear and apparel is right there. Plenty of T-shirts and polo shirts available in men's and women's styles and sizes. The tote bag can fit Hamfest handouts, a small QRP rig, your HT, Field Day munchies, and then the sport bag. Oh, this is nice. I want one of these myself. It's an ideal travel companion, can hold everything from spare cables and tools to a change of clothes and extra shoes. And the DX Engineering umbrella, my wife keeps one in her car, perfect for keeping the sun and rain off your neck during field day. And it's small. It packs down very, very tiny. My wife loves it. Visit the gifts, clothing, and memorabilia section of dxengineering.com to see more gift ideas. And, of course, DX Engineering, a proud sponsor of the E51 AMF North Cook Islands D-Expedition coming up next month in January. And you know what I'm going to say now. DX Engineering ships faster than anyone else in the industry. Get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern. If it's in stock, it'll be on a truck headed your way tonight. Proven products, expert advice, DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. Request your catalog or shop online 24/7, 365 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. dxengineering.com/hamnation. Thank you, DX Engineering, for your support of Ham Nation.
And Don will be back in a few moments with tonight's Newsline. And he'll be back with us live again next week. I'm going to throw it over to Bob now. But, Bob, let me ask you, you knew what the heck this was, didn't you?
Yeah. In fact, if I tilt my camera, I don't think I can do it that high. I have a bunch of gear up above me that use those. That's a 35 MC15, I think it is. 35 MC1. Yeah. Yep. Switchcraft.
Yep. I learned about these, well, I'd seen them for years, but in college, my instructor made me solder one of these on, and I didn't have a good round ball of solder right there on the end of it. It had some wires frayed out of it, and he took it and went like this on the top of my hand and scratched it up, and he said, I think that's a little rough, isn't it? So, yeah, I know you don't need the little wires hanging out of the top of it. Need a nice ball of solder on it.
It's always very important that you get that center soldered. That's real important. So what happens is you'll stick the wire through it, and the solder will kind of run off to the edge, and then you're in big trouble. But otherwise, those were fun, and I still use a few of them on the old gear up above me. You'll see a lot of it. So good deal, good deal. And we'll see if they know what your other project was. I've been listening to WTWW over here with my Christmas Pro 7, which is featured by DX Engineering this month. So if you don't have a pair of these, I'm telling you, it's just the best. I know there's lots of headsets out there, but oh my gosh, the 7 is really great. Sounds good too, but WTWW, you sounded great there, George. I better turn that down or I'll get all kinds of stuff going on. We've been having fun on there on Saturday night, playing music on the theater organ. Got a lot of Christmas music coming up starting Saturday. We'll talk about that more. But talking about Christmas, there's a happening on 3916, and it's all happening from Pete, our guest tonight, KE5GGY. How are you, Pete? Good to see you, buddy.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas from Big D. How are you?
We're good. We're really good, and I'm glad you could join us. You guys have way too much fun on 3916, but one of the things that I wanted you to come on tonight and talk about are all of these things that you're doing with the Santa Claus net. How long has that been going, and how's that all working, Pete? Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, Bob, it's been a tremendous experience for me. First, a little background about 3916. This frequency has been some incredible nets since 1998, when a ham W4FCW was looking for a place to talk on 80 meters, and he found a not-so-welcome group on one frequency, and another frequency kind of told him to get lost, and he decided, you know what, I'm going to start a net and invite everybody to be there. And so that's what happened one night in November back in 98, and it was called the Freewheelers. And since then, we've expanded to a number of nets. We actually start at 7 o'clock with the Rag Chew crew on 3916, 8:30 is the Tailgaters, 10 o'clock is the Freewheelers. And Bob, as you know, because you've checked in, it's a net all about camaraderie and friendship and ham radio. Now, let's talk about SantaNet. About 11 years ago, I had a young boy at home, and I was just talking with some of the guys on 3916 on a Christmas Eve, and we brainstormed, you know, hey, what if we were to connect our kids with Santa? You could be a relay station for my child and vice versa. And that was the humble beginning that night 11 years ago of what has grown into an annual event on 3916, where we connect good boys and girls with Santa Claus every night at 7:30 p.m. Central. So, you know, in our first year, we probably had half a dozen kids connect with Santa Claus. This year, guys, we're expecting, well, hundreds. I think we're going to hit 600. We may even hit more. We're on pace for a huge increase. We might even have a 60 or 70% increase, thanks in large part to Ham Nation and ARRL and all the exposure we're getting from fine programs like this. So it's been a great process. And, you know, the other thing it does, Bob, is it brings young people to ham radio. We have a number of situations where a young person came on and talked to us at age 7 or 8 on the Santa net, and they got bit by the ham radio bug. And before you know it, the next year I'm talking to them with a license. So it's been incredible, and I don't know what else I can say except it's the highlight of our year on 3916.
Well, it's a highlight of ham radio because you can take your families there, and you can be assured that you're not going to hear some weird languages and stuff like that. The guys are really, they're gentlemen. That's one thing I've always noticed about the entire group. And if anybody gets a little ruckus, why, they're gone. But you do the Santa thing. Give us a little bit of information about the time and when we can tune in and bring our children, grandchildren in. Sure. And Santa Claus.
Yep, yep. SantaNet runs at 7:30 every night. Every night, seven nights a week, through and including Christmas Eve. So we'll be there on December 24th. Based on experience, this week is a great week to check in because starting next week, the week of Christmas, it gets pretty busy. But anytime you want to check in, we take pre-net check-ins anytime. You can send an email with a check-in to me at KiloEcho5GolfGolfYankee@gmail.com, KE5GGY@gmail.com. You can also get on our Facebook page for SantaNet and do a pre-net check-in there. You go to Facebook.com, search SantaNet, two words, and then look for the check-ins for that particular day. It'll be pinned to the top of the Facebook page. And let us know you're out there. Of course, leave us the pertinent information, name and call sign, location, names and ages of your children. And with that information, we will connect them with Santa Claus. So 7 o'clock, we start getting everything going. On the frequency, we start calling the relay stations to make sure that everybody is being heard. And, oh, I do want to mention the relay stations for a second, Bob. You know, with the band being so long of late, we have put together a network of anywhere from 6 to maybe 12 stations every night that are out there listening for check-ins and relaying in the voice of Santa. So even though the band is long and I might not be able to hear somebody 10 miles from my QTH, we have the capability to get everybody connected with Santa. And to date, I'm not aware of anybody that we couldn't connect with Santa at the North Pole. So every night at 7:30 Central, and more information, by the way, at our website, which I think is on the lower third there, 3916nets.com, 3916nets.com.
Well, that's great information. Yeah, we... Ham Nation is a video show as we started out, but it goes into podcasts. And so there's a lot of listeners to the show. So you want to be sure to tell them that it's net at plural and you'll get there. One of the other things about you guys on 3916, you do a trivia thing every night. That takes an amazing amount of work. Do you do that or who does all of that figures out the questions?
Well, I'm one of the net controls for it. In fact, up until the point Fox Central, and it's really morphed into something pretty incredible. You know, it just started one night when somebody suggested, "Hey, let's talk about some Andy Griffith trivia." So it started with that, and now it's a full half hour every night. So you know, we have several sources that we use for questions. And we throw it out to everybody. If you know the answer, you give us your call sign. We try to even the playing field. We'll ask for barefoot stations to check in. And it's been tremendous. And it's kind of fun because it ends up being kind of a consensus group think, you know, where and we'll get into some pretty difficult questions. And between 5 or 6 people on the net, we'll put the answer together. Now, you know, cheating, of course, is using Google or a search engine. But we can usually tell the knuckleheads that are doing that because their answers are just too perfect.
If you get the right answers, you have big prizes like BMWs or you know, a motorcycle. You have big prizes, or are there any prizes at all?
We just refer them to Ham Nation and say you'll get something from Bob's trunk.
Yeah. Well, I listen a lot. I don't check in, but I do listen a lot. And the Andy Griffin thing, here you go. Check this out. I'll get my camera. I'll make you dizzy for a minute. You see this old guy right here?
Is that by chance the radio? Yeah, I heard it wasn't even a radio in the – are you talking about the thing that was in the sheriff's office?
Yep. There's one above it, too. I got 2 of them. Well, I have 5 of them, but that's another
story.
And
I heard somebody told me they're amplifiers and not radios. Is that correct?
No. It's what's funny about it is they have a this is an ICO 720 transmitter, and they also on top of, and they change them around once in a while. It depends on the show how old they were. But most of the time is that. Then they'll also have a CB radio that Ico made. But most of the time I'm seeing that one. And that's the Ico 720. And when you hear me on the air on AM, that's what I'm using. The modulators beside it. Andy Griffin doesn't have the modulator, but that's okay. But anyway, you know they're not hooked up to work anyway. But there's a piece of trivia for you. It's an Ico 720. And they have some kind of other microphone with it. I don't know what it is. It's a Shure or I'm not sure. It's some kind of a different microphone. But there you go. And we'll have to check in with you and see if we can answer some of those questions for you too, okay?
Well, even better, how about this? Why don't you join us some night at 9 o'clock and you could call a special edition of 3916 Trivia. We'll make it ham radio related and we'll use you to challenge hams throughout the country on 3916. The invitation, consider it made tonight.
We can do it. Plus, you know, this is our 50th year for Heil Sound. I've been on the road forever with everybody from the Grateful Dead to the Who to Carrie Underwood. So I have a lot of stories there, but some of them I wouldn't want to tell because it wouldn't be right for some of the personalities. But I have a lot of fun things that we did, and we could do some of that too because you guys do some rock and roll trivia once in a while also.
We do.
Well,
we're
so thrilled that you could show up and take time out of your day with the 3916 carry-ins on and the wonderful things you do with the Santa Net. That's just really super, and I personally want to thank you for doing that and continue on, and we'll have you back on here again. We'll bring some of the other aspects going on there.
Sure, and maybe in closing, Bob, I could just throw out two invitations. First of all, obviously, if you have children or grandchildren, neighbor kids maybe that are near you that you could bless his Christmas time by connecting him to Santa. Come on into 3916. We'll get him on the air. It'll be fun. We'll also create hopefully some new ham radio operators too, because once somebody talks to Santa Claus through all the static and the crackle and the long distance transmission, it just does something pretty special. And then beyond that, I guess I would invite anybody that maybe has. I don't know how to put it, but maybe you haven't had a good experience on 80 meters, or if you haven't been able to get in with a group where you feel comfortable. We hear from people almost every day that say, you know what, until I found 3916, I was, I just was kind of disenchanted, or I didn't have a group that I could really be part of. So Ken Odom was the gentleman. He's now a Silent Key W4FCW that founded the net back in 98. And I think his heart, I didn't know him. I never talked to him, but I kind of understand where he was coming from, because, you listen to groups on 80 meters and, some of them are kind of hard to get into. But I think the heart of 3916 is that we're trying to be a place that everybody can come and be welcome. As we politics, we keep it clean. And, we end up talking about ham radio. We get into great discussions about antennas, about propagation, about emergency service on radio. And in addition to that, we've got all the fun stuff we do, like trivia and Santanet and the Wayback Machine, which is our nightly history report that we do at 10 o'clock. So it really is kind of a variety show, if you will, kind of like old time radio where you can listen to the radio and really be part of something special.
Well, that's really great. And I want you to answer one question and going. I found this picture and I want to know what about this picture. Tell me about this picture. Like, holy smokes.
Yeah, that's you can do a lot in pictures. Let me just tell you what that was. That was taken outside of the Salem radio stations in Dallas. I was the VP and market manager for Salem Radio for 12 years. And I had just come back from lunch, and I was eating lunch with the guy that owned the motorcycle. And I remember asking him if I could take a picture on the motorcycle, and he said yes, and I did, and I think I used it as maybe a Facebook photo. So check that out. Get your motor running. Head out of the highway. Looking for adventure. Born to be wild.
Have to have you come back sometime and tell us about your radio DJ days. Those were probably really fun days too for you.
Well, you know, Bob, you and I both got to do things we love for our entire careers, and we're both blessed. And I'm still involved in radio. I've got a couple of radio shows that air in Dallas. We're about to start a new show that's going to go into multiple markets. So I just love what I do. And my wife told me about 15 years ago I needed to get a hobby. And little did she know that my hobby would end up being an extension of what I do all day. So I'm sure she's regretted that. She's actually thankful that I haven't electrocuted myself yet. So
oh, great. Well, thanks for being here. We'll see you on 3916 after a while. I bet you're going to have a whole bunch of people there looking for you. Thanks
Merry
a
Christmas.
Lot for all
and
you
just one more thing here, guys. Ho, ho, ho! Yep. Merry Christmas from 3916. See you on the net.
All right. That's great. So long, Pete. We'll catch up with you again real soon. That's for sure. What a great guy. Told you guys we had some fun stuff. He's a fun guy. Go check him out, 3916. And if you're listening on WTWW, boy, Ted's got it all fired up over there tonight. Man, oh, man, that's great. But in the meantime, we're going to go find out what's going on with ICOM.
'Tis the season. The holidays are here. Surprise your favorite ham this season with the gift that's on their Santa list. The holidays are just around the corner, and ICOM has an array of radios to fill your stockings and place under the tree. Just arrived for the holidays, the ID51A Plus 2 provides new models for extended D-Star coverage. Available in five colors, the ID51A Plus 2 is the perfect stocking stuffer. Terminal and access mode, send and receive text messages and pictures, DV fast data mode, and easy FM repeater settings. Ideas for the contest are on the go? Try the IC7300. It's a high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design. The real fun starts here. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Push performance to the pinnacle with the IC7600. Following in the footsteps of ICOM's flagship radio, the IC7600 has an intuitive operation and the latest DSP technologies. Digital IF filter, dual DSP, 5.8-inch ultra-wide TFT display, and high-resolution real-time spectrum scope. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
You can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. Register to win for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And while you're there, learn how you could win in the monthly grand prize drawing for December. That monthly grand prize is going to be the ICOM ID51A Plus 2 dual band dual watch VHF UHF handy talkie. It does both analog and D-Star. It has built-in GPS receiver, DV and FM repeater list functions, independent AM/FM receiver, free Android apps available, and a lot more. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And now Bob has another guest with us tonight, maybe another Santa.
Well, we're going to have some fun with this, too. I can't believe how good the sounding over on WTWW tonight. Man, oh, man. Ted, you do great work. Well, I talked about it last week. You knew about it from the ARRL. But now we're going to show you some things and let you hear some things. But here's one of the guys that helped put it all together, and we're all familiar with him. And that's Tim Duffy. Tim, how you doing?
Hello, Bob. It's nice to see you. And Merry Christmas to you, Bob.
Same to you. And you're in that world-class station. We love it when we get to see some of that. But we're here to talk about what happened last weekend with N1BCG. You were working that and a part of that. Tell us a little bit about what went on there.
Well, you know, this is an amazing event. Back December 11th in 1921, and they were actually in tents between Greenwich, Connecticut, and Scotland. One BCG worked two ZE, And it was the first transatlantic QSO via amateur radio. And it was a absolute historic event. You know, Marconi had done it before that, but he had been running lots of power and huge antennas. And here it was, amateur radio had spanned the Atlantic Ocean. So this past Sunday, the reenactment came about, and it was a cooperative event from the American Radio Relay League and the Radio Club of America, RCA, and also the Radio Society of Great Britain. We all got together and reenacted that transatlantic QSO. And it was Radio Club of America that really spurred on this whole effort because guys like Major Armstrong had constructed a super heterodyne receiver. This was groundbreaking stuff. And so last Sunday, we got together in a school up in Greenwich, Connecticut, and we made it happen, Bob.
Well, one thing we want to really put to the front of the whole deal is that you talk about it, but we really focus, or at least I do, on the fact that these were hams, and they were running not very much power, whereas, yeah, like you said, Marconi, he had all kinds of big stuff going on. No, these are just regular hams like you or I, and they didn't have a lot of equipment. In those days, it certainly wasn't a lot of power. So they were using the Viking 2 transmitter and a national receiver. Is that what they were using on the U.S. side?
Not quite. that would have been real fancy and really high tech equipment. This was the breadboard stuff, very early vacuum tubes. Just, you know, this was the cutting edge of radio as it was beginning. And it was only 95 years ago. Dr. Harold Beveridge, you know, a lot of people say the Beveridge antenna. Well, it's not something you drink. This, you know, Harold Beveridge was involved in this transatlantic QSO with amateur radio 95 years ago. They had a 1,300-foot listening antenna. And, you know, these guys caught all sorts of colds and had problems with the elements. It was very, very hostile, but they persevered like amateur radio always does, and they came through. So it was just an exciting event, and to recreate it using AM here this past Sunday was just amazing, Bob.
Yeah, well, that's what I had reference to, what they did in Greenwich Sunday. They had a Viking 2 and running maybe, I think those things only run maybe 60, 80, 100 watts. And so they didn't have a lot of power either. So they tried to keep it down. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, and that is the spirit of amateur radio, right? Use the power necessary to make the communication. But even today, with the great receivers that we have, 100 watts goes all the way around the world. And with simple wire antennas that we had in Greenwich, Connecticut, and also over in Scotland, we made the QSO once again, commemorating 95 years. And every year leading up to the 100-year celebration, which will occur in 2021, and boy, do we have some great things in store for that one, Bob.
That ought to be great. Well, we've got some audio. Let's see if Victor can pull up some of this. It's some of the audio. And then we got some pictures, a few pictures that was taken, that were taken. So,
time is 6 o'clock on Monday morning. It's the 12th of December. Welcome to Good Morning Scotland with Gillian Morris and Gary Robertson. Amateur radio enthusiasts from Scotland and America have recreated the first ever transatlantic shortwave broadcast. Using modern and historic equipment, members of the Radio Society of Great Britain in Ayrshire exchanged Morse code and voice messages with a station in Greenwich in Connecticut. 95 years ago, a broadcast from the same location was successfully received by a temporary radio station that had been specially set up in a tent near Ardrossan Harbour. Hugh Williams reports.
Golf Bravo 2, Zulu Echo. Golf Bravo 2, Zulu Echo. Listening.
As the massive antenna on the roof scans the skies, Jason O'Neill calls out and sends Morse messages across the Atlantic.
These are pictures from the American side.
Len Padgett from the Radio Society of Great Britain, call sign GM0ONX, explains exactly what the anniversary means.
So the big boys of radio, which is the likes of Marconi at that time, were using really powerful kit on long wave, and this showed you needed lower power kit and you could use shortwave and get around the world.
There are a lot of people on the air, but so far no sign of the station at Greenwich in Connecticut, from where the first successful transatlantic shortwave message was sent 95 years ago.
Secure 20 metres, Golf Bravo 2, Zulu Echo. November 1, Bravo Charlie Golf. The top end of this band is quite difficult and struggling to copy you. I'll see you for Sked in a few minutes on the CW end of the band. N1, BCG, Golf Bravo 2, Zulu Echo 73.
What all that means in plain English, I think, is that the American station is there just about, but not really intelligible. So they're going to try again in a short time using Morse.
All right, sounds good. Yep, the reconnection between Greenwich, Connecticut and Ardrossan, Scotland should be any moment now.
On the eastern seaboard of the United States, a small group's gathered, as eager to talk to Esha as Esha is to hear from them.
Well, I appreciate you checking in for the 1BCG commemorative event, the 95th anniversary of the first shortwave crossing of the Atlantic.
At last, the two radio stations are talking to each other.
Jason, it's good to make contact with you.
After a brief exchange, the Americans sign off.
All right, Jason, 7-3, thank you very much for the reconnection from Greenwich, Connecticut to Ardrossan, Scotland. 7-3 for now on this frequency from November 1, Bravo, Charlie, Golf.
All right.
All right.
Congratulations.
Well done.
In 5 years from now, it'll be the 100th anniversary.
Hugh Williams reporting there from Ardrossan, as we're now going to call it. The time is 7:08.
That was from a commercial radio station in Scotland. And that was sent to me along with a bunch of pictures and stuff. Brian, KB3WF sent those to me, and I appreciate that. I got a really cool picture too, Tim. Kind of, to me, this is kind of a historic picture. You know both of those fellows, right?
Oh, yes. On the left, that's NY2RF. That's Tom Gallagher, who's the new CEO at the ARRL. And he was on the air, and we had a great QSO between the ARRL CEO and the president of the Radio Club of America here at K3LR. So, and there is Clark N1BCG himself, who is he's just over the top involved with the 1BCG memorabilia and made sure that we had a great AM QSO. An outstanding event. And we hope that Ham's here next year, and all the years that go on here on December 11th will help us commemorate this very historic event, Bob.
Yeah, it's I know I've had a couple of people this week say to me, "Why do you get all enthused about all this old stuff?" And well, it's the old stuff that makes all the new stuff possible, and it all started with all of this old stuff. And I still enjoy it. I was on the air this morning. I get on the air every morning, usually if everything's okay, at 9 o'clock with that transmitter we just showed, that little 60-watt novice transmitter and the modulator. And you have to put it all together. It's something you just don't go buy and throw in the air. However, what's happened, Tim, as you well know, all of these new radios sound great on AM. The 7300 is – there was a guy on last night on 3885, and the guys didn't believe it. The fellows had a KW1. That's the – King Tut transmitter that right now is, if you could find one, it's $35,000. And that was the big Collins thing back in the day. The guy with the 7300 sounded just as well. So we're kind of blessed, aren't we, that all the new rigs sound great on all modes.
You know, we really are, because you can go get a 7300 for a very small amount of money, and it's a tremendous performer. But I got to tell you, Bob, I had never had my ICOM IC7851 on AM until last Sunday. And boy, did it work great. And, you know, I think what happens is a lot of the new guys to HF tune on to AM and they hear this high fidelity and they say, wow, boy, does that sound great. So I think you're finding more and more amateur radio operators on the HF bands are getting hooked on AM. And so it was amazing the number of QSOs that are going on 40 and 80 meters all night long and during the daytime on the high end of the phone bands.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to go a little history, you can help me go along. I got into this hobby in 1956 with this Harvey Wells. It's right down here behind me. I still have it, still on the air. And in those days, it was AM. Sideband really wasn't making the hit yet. And over my shoulder, that guy right there changed ham radio. And that guy right there was Wes Shum, Central Electronics Gear. He came up with the 10A, then the 10B, and the 20A. Most of them were kits. I built that when I was 18 years old. It was a miracle. What he did is he took the carrier out, and instead of you being 8 KCs wide, because we were getting more and more hams on the air, he did single sidebands. See, AM is two sidebands. It's a double sideband with a carrier. So what Wes did is he took the carrier out and then chopped off one of the sidebands. And, Tim, I was so blessed to spend some time with him in the last year of his life. It was so fun to get to hear some of the history. Did you know that his original idea was, and they did it in the early days, that you could have one conversation on lower sideband and one conversation on upper. Had you ever heard that?
You know, that was the real multitasking, Bob. You know, sharing the spectrum, making more efficient use of the spectrum, and having one conversation on lower and one conversation on upper sideband. And, you know, we all enjoy single sideband as it is today, and it's been going on for a long time. But boy, when you step back and you hear just how rich the sound is on AM, and there's a whole new world out there, because there are guys that try to work all the countries on AM. So they're working DXCC using AM. The resurgence of AM is something that is really to take hold of. And these new radios, as you said, just work fabulously on AM.
Oh, we really had a real bugaboo for the past decades. The league never really took to it. They kind of like told us to get lost. And I have many pieces of information that were published. They didn't want to know about it. Well, Tom's totally opposite. Joe Walsh and I took their gear you saw in one of those pictures, a Viking transmitter, Johnson Viking, and an NC300, a national receiver. We took it to a W1AW. Joe and I thought they should be on AM, and they were, and they are. But we never really got any kind of publicity or no help. Well, we got help now, and I think you're going to see a lot of things happen, because it's another mode. It's as important as CW or RIDI or any digital mode. So I'm really excited about all of this. And in closing all this, we have to make sure that everybody understands something that happened in the late 50s. The sidebanders came on, started growing, and here you had the AMers. Well, they started fighting each other. You can't put them together, and it was a war. I mean, war. I know of some situations where guys would bang on the door and they'd have their guns with them. I'm serious about this. It was awful. And so what they did is the hams, because they didn't have any help from the league or anybody else, the hams said, okay, we're going to have a gentleman's agreement, because that's another thing about AM. It's a very, very gentleman conversation on it. You don't hear all kinds of craziness. These guys are usually talking about their transmitters and rigs. But they set up a gentleman's agreement on their own. And 3870 to 3890 is reserved for AM. Do not transmit sideband there. And that's just a very small space. Look at all the space that sideband has and all that CW has. But nobody talks about that window for AM. On 40, it's even worse. It's only 7290 to 7295. You can only get a couple in there. But we reserve those, and it's a gentleman's agreement. And we just need to let people know more about that. And I know that the league is going to start doing more and more for that. So we're really happy about that. But this event sure pushed AM out in front of everything, Tim, and I'm sure happy that RCA did their bit too. And you are the president of the Radio Club of America, and I congratulate you. You might talk just a little bit about what RCA does. We're not talking about your RCA tubes or radios. We're talking about the Radio Club of America, right?
Yes, it is the Radio Club of America, and you know, you can find us on the internet at radioclubofamerica.org, and we're the oldest wireless club in the world, formed in 1909. These are the pioneers of radio as it exists today, and today we're involved with tremendous high school and college programs. Carol Perry, WB2MGP, who has been a guest on this show, has done a lot with she is one of our directors, and she has a tremendous outpouring of youth support. Also at the Dayton Hamvention with the youth forums for almost 30 years now, and we also give scholarships to students that are in college in their junior and senior years in engineering disciplines. And we have a tremendous technical symposium. Bob, next year, the Radio Club of America comes to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is the birthplace of commercial radio, and we'll be touring KDKA. And if you want to become a member, it's never been easier. Just go to the website, radioclubofamerica.org, and get involved with the grassroots, with the beginnings of radio, and let's take it to the next century, Bob.
Oh, that's great. Well, congratulations again, and it's really fun to have all these wonderful people keep our hobby alive. The other thing that I want to add too is, if you're looking for gifts for your husband or your wife or your sons or daughters that are hams, go out and buy a subscription to QST, which is an ARRL membership. And I know a lot of people. I just met up with another guy last night. This is one of the bees of ham radio. He got out of ham radio some year ago because he wasn't having the right thing happen. He said, I'd write him and they wouldn't answer me. He said, well, Tom Gallagher, the new CEO, has changed that. He said, I just renewed my membership. So that's something you could do as a membership to the ARRL, RCA. Those are great gifts, along with, of course, a lot of other gifts that you can buy of gear. But those can be found easily on the internet of how to join. Thanks for coming along on such a late notice, Tim. I really appreciate you being here as always. And we'll continue on next time, see what we can do to keep this hobby alive.
Okay, Bob. Hope to hear you on AM here over the holidays. Thanks for having me on. And always, let's make sure that we continue to really further amateur radio. And you're going to take us into 2017 here in style.
Okay. Thank you for coming aboard from K3LR, the big contest station. Yay, yay. Well, I forgot to also tell you guys, if you want to do something really cool and it doesn't cost much, get a subscription to Electric Radio. Why you want to do that is it has all kinds of stuff about, guess what, some of the older radios, as well as fixing some of the new stuff. This is the best thing you can do, Electric Radio. Check it out. It's when it comes in the mail, man, I can't. can't get to it fast enough. I usually open it up at the post office to see what's in it, and I really mean that. It's an exciting little magazine, and a lot of information for us old characters and new characters. Well, the other thing about gifts is, you know, you can do this kind of stuff. Aha, yes. And they have a nice gift box for you. So check it out, and we're going to let Don tell us more about Harry's.
This episode of Ham Nation brought to you by Harry's. You know, finding a thoughtful gift for a guy that's also useful and practical can feel might nigh impossible. Well, don't stress this holiday season. Harry's has you covered. If you haven't heard of them before, Harry's was started by two best friends, Jeff and Andy. They were fed up with being overcharged for razors, so they started their own razor company to give people what they deserve, a great shave at a fair price. And this holiday, Harry's has ready-to-gift shave sets at all different price points, starting at just $15. They all come with a razor handle of your choice, shaving cream, replacement blades, and a travel cover. All of the Harry's blades are five German blades with a flex hinge, and they also include a precision trimmer for your sideburns. You're going to love them. The Winston set includes an engravable chrome handle if you want to add a personal touch. Now, you know, I'm not here live tonight. I'm actually at the iHeartMedia New Orleans Company Christmas party, and this morning I got up and I got myself my Harry's on. That's right. Oh, man. I am the head of the party with my Harry's face. It's something special that I do for myself. I don't shave with my Harry's razor every day, but I certainly do for special occasions. And the Christmas party tonight is certainly a special occasion. Now, I may not be the most interesting man in the room, but I certainly have the best face in the house. That's right. Stay Harry, my friends. And go to harrys.com. Use code HAMNATION. Get $5 off your order or your order for someone else. Ground shipping ends December 16th, so you got to get on it. Get your shave set today at harrys.com. Use code HAMNATION. Get $5 off. Harry's, thank you so much for your support of Ham Nation.
I have mine ready. Whatever color I want, right? And it really, really is good stuff. Well, we're going to go back to Don and his recorder, because he did Newsline, and learn what's been happening this week in ham radio.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2041, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, December 14th, 2016. As Newsline was going into production, a vote was imminent on the Amateur Radio Parity Act. As Newsline was going to air, a vote was to be held on the Amateur Radio Parity Act, which had passed the House of Representatives unanimously. However, it stalled in the Senate due to a single member, Democratic Senator Bill Nelson of Florida. Unfortunately, he would not budge, and the bill failed to get passed. The ARRL says they will push forward after the new year to get this important piece of legislation passed. We'll be watching this story as it continues to develop. The Christmas season seems to be a natural for amateur radio the world over. I mean, who doesn't want to talk to the big guy up north?
The annual OF9X Special Event Station, an amateur radio world tour that has featured Santa for more than three decades, has begun making its rounds from the Arctic Circle. Station operations will continue through the 31st of December, this time featuring Santa and his dozen elves, who not only assist Santa, but double as multipliers for contacts. All 12 will operate as Old Father 9 Christmas, OF9X, and will identify themselves further as elves with an additional three-letter designation, such as ART for Arto or NIK for Nico. So if you've contacted an elf, you'll hear OF9X / ART or something similar. There are a number of prizes available for different point scores, but no doubt the biggest prize of all for children of the participating amateurs will be the opportunity to win a QSO during Christmas week with the person the website is calling, and I quote, the true and live Santa. Be listening on the bands and believe. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
What's one activity everyone can participate in regardless of handicap or physical ability? Amateur radio, of course.
When members of the Union of Swiss Shortwave Amateurs, the USKA, operated a special event station recently at the Swiss Paraplegic Centre, an emergency and rehabilitation facility in Nottville, they were grateful for the possibilities. Operators weren't just looking to score some good contact while working with the patients there. They were eager to show those patients, most of whom have spinal cord injuries, the possibility radio holds for quadriplegics and paraplegics. On Saturday the 3rd of December, the Swiss Radio Amateurs were among a handful of radio groups, including those in Egypt and the UK, who were marking the International Day of Persons with Disabilities. Using the special call sign HB9IPHA, the Swiss amateurs worked on 20 metres at 100 watts with a Flex Radio 3000, but were also on VHF and UHF with a Yaesu FT857D. Thomas Huber, HB9FXU, the Switzerland coordinator for the IARU's information programme for handicapped radio amateurs, said in an email that the feedback from the patients, visitors and hospital employees was extremely positive. He told Amateur Radio Newsline that the response was especially encouraging as some participants got on the air for the first time. Thomas said the opportunity for outreach was also gratifying, and next year the HAMs plan to do more outreach to disabled men and women throughout Switzerland and get them involved on the air, and not just on one day every year. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ed Durant, DD5LP.
For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Graham Kemp, VK4BB, Ed Durant, DD5LP, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
The sun dazzles us with a beautiful eruption in the east, a really cool flare in the west, and a big coronal hole in the middle. Those stories and more in the news this week. The sun may be on its way to solar minimum, but it's sure not acting like it. Back on the 7th, we had this gorgeous filament eruption that launched a big solar storm east of Earth, so it's not Earthward directed. But no worries, we are actually in the middle of a solar storm right now due to this massive coronal hole that's sending Earth some fast wind. Now, this isn't a huge solar storm. It's only been giving us a little bit of aurora, but it's still enough to create some gorgeous pictures. And then we're not done. Just on the 10th, we got this beautiful flare, right, that's occulted. It's on the west limb. This is from region 2615. It's kind of a parting shot to say goodbye. I'm heading to the backside. Switching to our M-flare threat meter, you can see back in late November, region 2615 was actually an M-flare player. It was popping off a few M-class flares here and there, making the amateur radio bands have some radio blackouts, causing a few issues for GPS users. But then as kind of this region transited the Earth strike zone, it quieted down and quieted down. Only had a few C-class flares and then pretty much nothing until it rotated to the west limb. And just on December 10th, pow, it pops this other C-class flare, which might even have been an M-class flare, and it launched a solar storm. Now, we're not going to see that thing. That's off way to the west of us, but it is kind of a parting kiss goodbye as region 2615 rotates around the disk. Switching to our solar storm conditions, you can see back in early December, things were pretty quiet, and it's actually been quiet for quite some time. But then this big coronal hole rotated in through the Earth strike zone, and it's starting around the 8th, that first finger-like projection rotated right through that strike zone and gave us some decent fast wind, which brought up the aurora activity. Then things quieted down for just a moment, and then a bigger finger rotated right through the strike zone once again, because it's kind of a weird-shaped hole, but it's managed to give us even more activity, so we actually popped up to storm levels and got a little bit of aurora all around the world. Then things have dropped back down since then, and we're beginning to see things wane. So you amateur radio operators, all that disturbance that you've been seeing on the bands over the past few days, that's going to start quieting down and quieting down. And you aurora photographers, well, this may be it for a little while. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are still in that high-speed stream, but that's going to be waning here in the next few days. You can see NOAA is expecting us to have active conditions at high latitudes with about 15 to 20% chance of a minor storm. But again, this is going to be kind of calming down throughout the week. At mid-latitudes, we're really only expecting about unsettled conditions with about a 10 to 20% chance of maybe active conditions. So your aurora photographers, you're probably going to have to start packing it in, especially if you're at mid-latitudes. latitudes and wait it out for maybe about the next 10 days to maybe even 2 weeks before we get a chance for some other storming. Now, you ham radio operators, you should be rejoicing because the conditions will start improving right about now and they continue to look good throughout the rest of the week. Switching to our solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, as far as flares are concerned, everything is in the green. The disk is spotless, which for you GPS operators is really good news. You guys are in the clear, and it's going to continue to be like that into the foreseeable future. Now, as far as you amateur radio operators are concerned, it's a different story. Why? The disk is spotless, which means you barely have enough solar flux to even keep radio propagation going in the upper atmosphere. So you can see we're kind of in the yellow right here. We're sitting really at marginal levels at 70-ish, and that's barely enough that you need. So even though the solar storm will move out, you will still continue to have sporadic problems simply because there's just not enough charged environment to keep you guys going. So the space weather this week has actually been pretty active, but we are beginning to calm down and calm down. We had that huge coronal hole that's been transiting the Earth strike zone over the past couple days, and that has given us some gorgeous aurora, but things are beginning to kind of wane as that region rotates off of the west limb. Now, outside of that, it's been pretty spotless because region 2615 is now on the backside. So we really have very little solar flux, and you amateur radio operators, well, you just kind of have to struggle here for the next 5 days or so until the region from the backside comes onto the east limb. And that should bring us a little bit more solar flux to get propagation going again. And with it will also be another coronal hole, and that should be back in the Earth strike zone in about 12 days or so. So you aurora photographers, you also have to kind of just wait out this quiet spell until we get another chance for some solar storming. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Wow. Oh, wow. She's something else. Thank you so much, Don. And thank you, Dr. Scove. It's really great to hear what's going to happen next week, because we're later this week, perhaps. But we're so happy to have all of those reports. Hey, George, are you still there? Are you awake? I want to show you something, George. Check it out.
Yeah, what do you got?
This is no joke. This is Art Collins' personal microphone that was given to me by one of his engineers some years ago. But look at the connector on the bottom of it.
Yep.
It's a 35. And I have this, I always thought this was the cutest little microphone. Too bad they don't sound good, but isn't it cute? Cute little microphone. And at the end of the cable, guess what it's got? 35C. Yep. And then here was something else. See, as time went on, guys went into phone jacks, so they had an adapter, and you could put this adapter, and now you had a 35C that would go into a phone. I just thought I'd tell you, just because I did. Hi, Amanda. How are you, dear? Are you? I'm sorry I took up your time, but I had a word for George.
Oh, that's okay. I think we lost Tim tonight, so we don't have the questions wanted to give to him. But that's okay. Thanks, Tim, for being on. I'm going to go ahead and ask you this, Bob, because you are also an expert in everything. This question came from email, and I can't remember his call sign right now, but he says, why don't manufacturers list the class of their amplifiers in advertisements? If I want to operate CW, then I would go for a Class C or an AB for voice. ACOM seems to be the only one that lists an AB1, but all others seem to omit the class of the amplifiers. Why do you think that is, Bob?
I don't know, because my amplifiers I have a switch on them, and I can put it in Class C, or I can put it in AB. I don't know. I haven't paid attention to that, so I can't answer that.
Okay.
I can tell you one thing, that it takes more power supply and a bigger amplifier to do things for RIDI and CW than it does, especially AM, where the carrier's going all the time. Maybe a lot of them don't want to do that because their amplifiers really aren't that good. Maybe, I don't know. But most of my amps have a switch on it, and you can switch it.
And that's how my amplifier is. I do have a standby, operate, and then SSB and CW switch up and down. So, what about you, George? Do you use an amplifier at all?
I use an amplifier, but I have an Ameritron, and they saved money on that extra switch there. I don't have one.
Okay. Very good. Yeah. All right. My next question, Don actually is going to know the answer to this, Jeremy. I'm going to go ahead and tell you that right now because he knows Kendra and Abby very well, and he would have this answer on the top of his head. But just in case maybe Bob or George remembers, VA3ZTF, Jeremy has some kids that are getting interested in ham radio, and he wanted to know if there were any kid nets around that they could jump on, you know, IRLP or Echolink. And I do believe that Abby and Kendra run one, but I can't remember what node it's on. George, do you by chance remember?
I sure don't, but Don would be the most likely to know.
Exactly. So, Jeremy, we'll ask that again next week. I apologize for that. We just blame Don. It's all his fault. That's our go-to excuse, by the way. And other than that, I don't have anything. The rest were for Tim, so I'll say thanks. Say, Bob, I heard you might be going somewhere tonight. Where are you headed to?
There's Tim.
Oh,
I'm going Tim's about here. 100 feet. 100 feet. What am I doing? East. I've got to go out in the studio and record my Christmas shows. So I wanted to let everybody know that's listening to WTWW on Saturday, just a little commercial for us, that Saturday at 8 o'clock Central, you can go to WTWW 5085, and you'll hear lots of Christmas music. And I love playing Christmas music, so the next 2 weeks we're going to be doing that. So I just wanted to let you know that's where we're headed. We're going to go out and record next Saturday and the Saturday after. So there you go. And that's where we'll be. So thank you, Amanda. And yeah, we'll see everybody right here next week, huh?
Absolutely.
Oh, hey, listen, before we leave, I should read this. I got a nice email from Jack Prindle, and he has a fellow that's blind. He's a public safety dispatcher, the AES coordinator, all of that good stuff in emergency communications. But the radio he has is an FT-8800, and he can't see what frequencies he's on. Somebody told Jack that there was an add-on device which he could install to this radio, and it would add voice announcement. Does anybody know about that device? They heard there was one. They can't find it. So check it out. If you do, email me or holler at me or throw a rock in the window, whatever. If you know of a device that'll plug into the FT-8800 so that the sightless can see what or hear what frequency they're on. Anybody got an idea on it? Let me know.
Bob?
So,
I would say check the handyham.org, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M. .org, I believe. You know, that's a website with a lot of resources for amateurs with disabilities. I bet someone there would know.
I would think so, and that would be a great place to start. So there you go. Thank you, George. Handy hams. Well, you just bring your problems of your radios. I don't want to hear about your personal problems. I don't care if your car breaks down, all that. We take care of electronic gadgets called ham radios. Is that right, Amanda? This is the place right here?
Absolutely. We help in any way possible, any electronics.
Okay. All right. Well, this has been fun tonight, everybody. And have a nice week. We'll see you here next Wednesday. In the meantime, we'll see you somewhere on the bands and having fun. You'll find me on the AM windows. But otherwise, hey, you never know. I think I might go up and join Pete and the guys on the freewheelers, 3916. Let's do that for a while. Thanks, everybody. Victor, you were right on. Brian is not feeling well tonight, so Victor was stepping in and it made it happen.
Thanks,
this
Bob.
Is Bob Heil, K9EID, for all of the troops here at Ham Nation. So long, 7-3, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye for now.